WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the baseball season. Finally, it's here. Marty Conway is excited about that. We're going to be having the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries. We're going to be at Greenmount Station this week. Next week, we're GNA Coney Island Hot Dog and Crab Cake, where I used to get my hot dogs before I went over to Marty Conway's Memorial Stadium back in the 1980s. And on the 27th, we'll be at Conrad's Crabs, where they make the big fat crabs, pulling them out of the water. We're going to have their crab cake in a conversation in Perry Hall. Marty has been my friend for a number of years. He ran all things Orioles business back. Oh, you've been reminded of some things here the last couple of days. Sutcliffe on the hill. They've chopped up left field. You recognize probably everything other than the 10,000 empty seats they had on opening day, huh?
Yeah. So when I was thinking about this yesterday, I might have seen the fewest amount of Rick Sutcliffe pitches because of all the things we were doing that day. I mean, we occasionally got to peek out to see what was going on in the field, but there were so many things going on in order to make that day actually happen, because we were down to the last minute. Guest sponsors, activations, you name it. I hope people really enjoyed the game, because I think I saw maybe an inning of it. But I did watch it later on television. It seemed really interesting. But being there that day, we were really working right down to the last minute.
Well, 30 years, 31, you know, we're going into the 31st season here. We talked about leases, money, franchises. It's been a little while since you and I got together. Bisciotti blew me off down in Palm Beach a couple weeks ago when he made his statements to selected media members. And the Broncos are going to sell for a lot of money. So the Nationals are going to hit the market now. The Orioles are whatever they are, but what the Orioles represent at this point when they can't sell out opening day, what I saw downtown just in general, a block and a half from the stadium, it's like there was no game going on. I don't know where this is headed, but I know the Orioles are going to lose a lot of games this year, but the fact that they get up and crawl and start to walk a little bit and Rutschman comes up and Rodriguez pitches in August or whatever, I'm wondering when people are going to fall in love with the franchise, if that's ever possible again. I mean, I'm 30 years into this jumping the shark and thinking, do I need to even have cable tele? Do I need to watch Masson? Is this even appointment viewing for beyond 30, 40,000 people in the marketplace anymore? Are there really 500,000 Oriole fans anymore? I'm starting to wonder how many people are really engaged in what they're doing.
Yeah, well, there's a transition going on, right, both on the field and off the field. The on-the-field transition has been well talked about. And look, the expectation is that, you know, the players that are in the minor leagues will come up and become, you know, major league players. The question is, you can look around the league. There's a lot of really, really good minor league baseball players, and they come up and they become pretty good or average major league players. Like, there's few that break out. And so that's the risk that you take when you're trying to cultivate this. I don't think people would have known that this would be a 5 or 6 or maybe even a 7 year process, not before they could win something substantial, but before they could even be competitive with this type of cycle. So a lot of things can happen. Look, you know, I know we're going to talk about the Nats in a minute, but the Nationals in 2018, Mark Lerner made a comment that they would never sell the team, that family would want to hold on to it, et cetera. Little did they know that we would have a 2 year, you know, COVID pandemic, right? So all these different plans and all these different, you know, prospects and different things, it's all fine and good, but you just don't know what the circumstances are going to be economically and a lot of other things in a couple of years. You know, right now people look at their grocery bill, they look at their gas bill, they look at a number of other things, and they say, you know, we're going to go to a game, but we're going to go to one game. Let's pick one in June. And it's when the Yankees are in town or the Red Sox or whoever it is that they really, really want to see. So I think your point is well taken, that a lot of things have changed both on the field, off the field. 2015, the Freddie Gray incidents downtown has changed the way people think about coming downtown. So there's all these different factors that what I've said is the turnaround in Baltimore is going to be more like a Manhattan project than it is a baseball turnaround, because you're going to have to seamlessly conduct a refurbishing of the franchise, but then also a revitalization of the fan base to get them in the habit of doing what? Buying tickets in advance and then coming down and following through on that. Because again, 81 games a year is not like 10 games a year across the street at M&T Bank Stadium, where, you know, that's a couple times a month, right? It's maybe twice in the month of September or October. And I'm committed to doing that. 81 games or even half of that for a half a season ticket. That's a substantial commitment now that we know that people just aren't, young people in particular, aren't as willing to make.
Marty Conway is our guest. He's the good professor at Georgetown. You can follow him. The wise folks around here do that out on LinkedIn as well as Twitter, retweeting and commenting on the business of sports. I want to say this about the Orioles and like where they are in this arc of trying to get better. And I think you being an insider and Dick Cass leaving the Ravens and Sashi Brown coming in. Mm-hmm. And Dick, who is a very front-facing executive in an era where, you know, I think a large percentage of Ravens fans know there's a guy named Dick Cass who's a president. He's been mm-hmm. in TV commercials. He has been doing this two decades. He has stood out at various points. If you're a PSL holder, you've probably been lectured to by him or have seen him on corporate videos. And certainly if you own a Skybox and you're that person, you know all about Dick Cass. Mm-hmm. I don't know that most people know who the president of the Cincinnati Bengals is in Cincinnati or the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas other than Jerry or what the right. names are. But when those things happen, and we talk about the talent of Ray Lewis or the talent of Lamar Jackson or the talent of Manny Machado that is allegedly going to turn your franchise around, make you a great team, and they're just going to sell tickets. I want to talk about the talent of people like you, the front office people, the Larry Lucchinos and the Janet Marie Smiths and the U. And, you know, let's go through the Ravens and give Kevin Byrne love and Dick Cass and any of the people who make things happen in those organizations that are never heard from. This is one of those things where the Orioles really, really lack from never having a five-tool player in their front office in any way to sort of build the business. And there's going to have to be that at some point. Who's negotiating the TV deals? Who's negotiating the hot dog deals? How can we get activation around the marketplace? How can we get Chick-fil-A giving away little Oreo widget? Like all of these things that smart businesses do. And I see what the Rams are trying to do in LA, and I was out there, and that's one of those things. They've been there 5 minutes, and they're trying to make something happen. But it feels like the Orioles have, and you and I have talked about this, all but given up. Like the reason there's nobody there on opening day is they are a dormant franchise when they're losing, and they've been losing for 6 years. They're almost ashamed of losing. So, like, they don't go out. Nobody's offered me tickets. Nobody's offered me a player. Nobody's offered me a chance to discuss the Orioles in 16 years. So they want me to stay away. And I think the feeling is whoever's running the place, and I guess that's TJ Brightman, they need brighter people. They need a brighter idea in the franchise to sell something beyond we're going to lose 100 games and maybe a star will come up at some point and we move the wall back.
Yeah, no, it's a substantial responsibility. Look, the person or, you know, man or woman that you have in that role or roles, there's more than just one. Team president, executive vice president, there's a couple of roles.
Business, sales, op, media, yeah, all of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the number one, there are two things about it. Number one is that person or persons have to be your chief salesperson in the community. Whether they hold that title or not, they have this thing, this wonderful thing called influence. And to use that influence around the community, you know, communities, all sorts of different communities, whether it's faith communities, nonprofit communities, business communities, all those types of things, they have this thing called influence, and they're able to connect the team, the franchise, the mission of the franchise with those various community groups. We know that's the history, particularly in Baltimore. Baltimore has a very defined history with its teams going back to 50 years ago or more, where people would feel comfortable recognizing a Brooks Robinson in the giant food market or Boog Powell or whoever it is.
Well, Marty, I was standing with Michael McCrary in the middle of pickles, in the middle of the lot and the second inning of the Oriole game on Monday. And I'm thinking to myself, That's kind of cool. You know, he won a Super Bowl. He's standing here. I run into Femi. I run into Guy. I said to McCurry, I run into you six times a year, whether I want to or not, because he's here. And there is something about him just being a statue walking through Fells Point saying, oh, that's a Raven. He lives here.
Right. And
that's
its own
marketing.
That's a community element to Baltimore that, again, I've not witnessed it in many, many other places, not in Washington. You know, maybe it happens in Charlotte. Maybe it happens in some other places to do that. But the key thing about that is that you have to have people who can convert that into fill in the blank. Buying tickets up front, buying season tickets, committing to suites, committing to corporate sponsorship relationships, media deals, all those different things down there. You can get those done on a transactional basis, which is kind of where we're at right now, which is, it's baseball. Yes, it's April through September. Like I said, we're going to come out once. We're going to buy one group of tickets, whatever. That's different than having a full-on commitment.
But Marty, 30 years ago, corporate businesses here had a want, a desire, a financial stake, and almost an obligation. It was almost an obligation for Provident Bank to have to buy a lot of something from the Orioles, not even media or marketing or having their commercials on the radio or having Chuck Thompson say their name. I'm just talking about all of those seats, that 3.6 million we talk about 30 years ago. There was an obligation to some degree, but it was a beautiful thing if you had 140 employees and you had four tickets, 12 rows off of third base at Orioles games, that Susie would take him tonight, Jack would have him next week, Bill took his family last week, and it becomes, and you give him the clients, it becomes all of that. When that goes away, all of a sudden it doesn't feel like an obligation. WNST is not obligated to buy Ravens tickets after they've thrown me out of my Ravens seats. So, you know, there's a point where they've thrown me out of my football seats, but I want to buy the tickets and they won't let me. The baseball teams never asked me to buy tickets, strangely enough. I don't think they ever ask anybody to buy tickets.
No. Like I said, you make an important point about what I just was explaining, I guess, the role of those individuals and how important they can be as a team, because you're building that. The reason why that happened in the days where banks and financial institutions and others, because there was demand from inside the organization for that. The worst thing that can happen is to pull out that drawer, whoever controls the tickets in that organization, and on a weekly basis, find out that a day or two before the game, they're still sitting in the drawer. Nobody has asked for them. Nobody really wants them. There hasn't been that sort of demand. And suddenly they say the day of, here we have them, who wants to go? And then, because you know what that leads to? The next year, they don't buy them.
Leonard Raskin and I talked about that. And Dennis Colatzos, I'm wearing my Coons. My sponsors were all Orioles season ticket holders in the 90s and early aughts. Yeah. Lots of them. And I said, what was the day where the paperwork came and you said, no mas, you know, what makes that happen? And Leonard said his wife wanted to go to Broadway and he thought that was a good trade-off that they wound up getting a Broadway subscription instead and figured, when I want to go to an Oriole game, I'll just buy a ticket whenever I want to go, which is exactly where my wife is with us getting thrown out of our Raven seats, where my wife is like, well, the tickets are $20 half the time game day. You can click a button at 9:30 in the morning, go see the Browns play for $35. If she wants to go to the game, she'll go. And I think like a concert, if the weather's good, I'll do it. We've changed on that as a city and as a community, and also with the expectation level of the corporate holder to obligate to buy into these tickets. And I don't know that that's ever coming back, no matter what.
It's possible. Look, it depends on the ownership structure of the franchise. One of the things that I recall in the past was at that level, at the ownership senior executive level, there were relationships in place that it was difficult to break that chain, to stop buying, to do that, right? Because you felt a sense of, you said it earlier, sort of a sense of obligation, whatever that was, because they had that relationship, could pick up the phone, could see these people at events, out in the community, and all that. Like I said, you can run the team very transactionally in any sport, in any community, and you can have some level of success. But if you really want it to be overwhelming success and profitability and all of that, it takes a 24/7, 365 day a year mindset, which is you're going to be in the community you're going to be seen, whether it's in commercials or not, or doing things, that type of stuff, to be there. You have to make a commitment to the media, to be present in the media quite a bit, to be available for people, to pick up the phone and say, hey, let's talk about this. And if you want to do it in one of these type of sessions, et cetera, as well. Because I think that's what people today see more than anything. I know there's a lot of social and digital media, but that's just, like I said, pure transactional. The question is, so my point is, it can be revived. I think it's possible. It's going to be a different tool set, a different mindset.
But isn't it going to take a Manny Machado of the front office? Is it going to take a really special person? Like, yeah. Sashi Brown's coming in here. He's the special person. He's the president of the team. I walked up and shook his hand. The first thing he said to me is, I won't be talking to you much. Really? Right. Really? Oh, really? Right. That's the first thing he said to me. Right. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, jobs changed. Dick talked all the time. Dick was honest all the time. Dick was front facing all the time, except with the Ray Rice punch in the glass. And that's between him and his creator at this point. But for the most part, the Ravens came at this a different way because they had to. They were competing with Cal Ripken and Camden Yards and all of that in the beginning. I don't know that certainly those people that competed hard, David Modell, you know, the Roy Summerhoff, that type of David Cope was involved, who I know you know back then. Those people are gone now, and it's a bunch of people that weren't around for PSLs, never met Art Modell, never cared about David Modell. There's a whole different group of corporate soldiers inside the Ravens, and I don't know what the Orioles are. I don't know any of their people. I just keep thinking to myself, at some point, somebody's going to come in there from out of town and be a Manny Machado in order for the business to work. Somebody that's going to come in there and not be afraid to shake anybody's hand, be front facing, be straight on about what the old man did to the franchise. The Washington Nationals are about to go through a transition, right? Like, they're going to have this heart transplant soon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've announced that after 15 years, they're quote unquote exploring some type of investments or a full on sale. Now, again, we know from experience, we're looking at the Denver Broncos going through it now. We saw the Kansas City Royals. We've seen we saw the Charlotte Panthers, the Carolina Panthers, all of that. If you're going to have, and Steve Bisciotti did this, obviously, in Baltimore, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you want control. So whether you put up the money and eventually you take control or you buy it outright right away. But after 15 years, they've announced that they're going to explore that opportunity for either investment or sale. I think that means absolutely a sale, probably in the range of $2 billion. But what it points up, and I made this point yesterday to somebody who was doing an event like yours and writing and reporting on it, in the Washington, D.C. market between the second quarter of 2020, so the sort of beginning of the pandemic, and 1 year later, the second quarter of 2021, the greater Washington area commercial real estate space contracted by 8.5 million square feet. That's a substantial amount. So what that
now, what does that say that to me? So I really understand that. So less office space was used in DC, less people are in the city of DC.
In the district, not just in the district inside, but in the greater Washington area, Northern Virginia, et cetera.
This means people going to work at an office somewhere in the district.
Those businesses gave up 8.5 million square feet of office space. Okay. So whatever was there a year before, later on, 8.5 million, it was gone. Right.
That's and the Nationals are like the Orioles were 30 years ago. They're a primary businesses owned twos and fours and boxes, right? There's a lot of that fills it up on opening day. Not a lot of dad and I are going to the game buying singles, right?
And the learners being in the commercial real estate business, having a big share of that 8.5 million that just disappeared in a year tells you two things. Number one, how hard communities were hit. I can't imagine Baltimore wasn't hit as well. And if you go down to around Capital One Arena and some other places, you see vacant restaurants, places where restaurants.
Marty, I went down a couple weeks ago. We were in DC for the day seeing Sticks at the Warner Theater. And we parked over where off New York Avenue, where you come in, where Busboys and Poets, and we walked the length of the city. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. I was in New York last week, and I was in New York a year ago for Springsteen, and I think I even reported to you, like, whoa, one out of every two places, you know, the basic Panera, you know, the places that are chain places gone, and the local places, you know, mom and pop places have turned the key in or changed their hours, or they're closed on Monday and Tuesday. Downtown DC is really, really difficult right now. There's no doubt about that.
Got hit really hard. Places right across from Capital One, Rosa Mexicana restaurant, which was a staple there, is now gone. Like, just, it's happened. So point being is that we can now see visibly how much impact COVID had, particularly in these city areas. So whether it's Baltimore or Washington, the second derivative of that is, how did it hit the franchise? How did it hit the franchise owners? And now what we also know, again, with the exception of the NFL, NFL is a separate entity. They were not really, they had some financial struggles, but it did not nowhere near rise to the level of baseball, basketball, and all that. And if you're in the ownership situation and you lose money, or you lose the opportunity to make money, you have really three ways to get it back. You either go to your partners and ask for a cash call, your limited partners, to provide more money to the franchise for liquidity. You go to the debt market, go to the bank and other debt markets, or you have to sell your franchise and you reap it back that way. So now we're starting to see, and that's what I think proves us, that in 2020 and 2021, in all sports other than the NFL, yes, the NFL had their struggles, but financially they were nowhere close to it. You see it. So if that's happening in Washington, and now we see that, what has happened in Baltimore? What has transpired in the walls of the warehouse? How difficult did it get? I suspect in 2020, there was no revenue sharing. In 2021, there was revenue sharing amongst the teams, but Major League Baseball had to take out loans in order to fund that revenue sharing. Those loans have to be paid back. So a lot of things, different things going on, I think, that we're now starting to learn as you come out of the pandemic and you come into a new collective bargaining agreement. I think you're going to see more franchises be up front and perhaps take on investment or sell, because it's very clear that that was a difficult time, especially for franchises that don't have deep pocketed owners who could fork over $170 million over 2 years to cover some of those losses or profits that they didn't make. And now we're starting to see that. So those are the challenges out there. Yes. And in the context of opening day yesterday, that they said there wasn't an out, you know, 44,000. We all know there wasn't.
Why they lie?
What didn't make the eye test. I don't know. Why did someone say that that was the largest crowd in the history of inaugurations? I mean, why do people do that? When everybody else can obviously see that.
It's a credibility killer for anybody who isn't really, really, drinking the orange Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? Like, and they've lied for so long about attendance that it's a part of their DNA, and they can't stop. And it's all part of, this is how we sell Southwest Airlines, because if we say there were 2.2 million people in the stadium, even though we're really only 1.1, that no one seems to notice or care about their inflated sense of whatever. They inflate everything, right? Except batting averages.
Let's look at the opposite side. If you come out of that and you say, look, we were in a lockout up until 4 weeks before the season. We couldn't sell tickets. We didn't know what the circumstances would be. In the 4 weeks, look at what we've done to drive in whatever the number that they actually got between a year ago, et cetera. And this is the kind of effort that we're making going forward. I think personally, media members like you and others would see that as a very credible response and be on board with them about other things, as opposed to wanting to keep, for whatever sake, a posterity sake, a consecutive opening day sellout streak intact, versus saying, very challenging offseason, could not sell tickets until 4 weeks ago, really working hard to make the 30th anniversary special. Look what we've done. Look out there, lots of Oriole fans and wearing orange and black. Isn't this a great day, et cetera. Then I think people say, they suddenly get on your side. And one of the things, every person that I know related to the media saw all these other positive things yesterday. And then in the seventh inning, when they announced that, there was nothing but, wait, what?
Well, it's the same old garbage. It's the same old, we're going to lie to you and we're going to gaslight you and you're going to report it as a sellout. Rock Kabako, because you work for us.
Well, but if you see what they've done, announced and then .. a sellout, it was many people's way of saying, look, I'm just telling you what they announced. right? That's all it was.
Yeah, but for a guy like me that's been lied to and really at the heart of all of it, the issue is you're just dishonest people. That would continue. At some point, a dynamic leader would come in and say all these things you just said and shake hands and say, I want to sell you tickets for next Wednesday. How can we get you back down to the ballpark? Can I get you free parking? Can I give you a dollar hot dog? Can I give you a Hawaiian shirt? Can I give you Shohei Ohtani? Can I give you a bobblehead? You know, what is it that will get people in? Part of it isn't, we're just going to lie about things. I mean, because they've done enough lying. Marty Conway is here. He tells the truth, which is why we have him as part of our Wise Conversations. Longtime Major League Baseball executive now doing the professorial thing at Georgetown. You had something you wanted to say, but the Orioles, John released a release. There was a statement made by ownership in regard to streaming and watching the games. Luke, this is the thing that drives Luke crazy. And Luke's, you know, wearing orange underwear. I'm still figuring out cutting my cord when I moved to the county and why in the world I'm going to want a $180 a month cable bill to have Oriole games. Like, if that's all there is, if that's the only thing that affects my job. But they've done a pretty wise job, or at least they think so, of boxing me out. That if I don't give them the money and I don't sign up for cable TV, I won't have Oriole games this year in market, right?
Yeah, that's right. So to simplify it as much as possible, right, the way that the regional sports networks, MAS and others, they have essentially said, unless you have the cable subscription, so if you want to watch it outside of your house, you have to have the cable subscription to be able to take it as you go. In order to be able to do that, they have to have some sort of application for your phone that can connect you to what you pay for so that you could have your games on the go. There's a different scenario that's playing out with people, which is, if I don't have cable television and I'm paying for Masson, can I buy a la carte a regional sports network? And the balance that they're trying to work, whether it's being successful or not, is how do you balance making it available without a cable subscription so that you could pay $9 or some sort of thing a month to stream it.
And that would be me if all I wanted was Oriole games, right? Okay.
Exactly. Versus the hostage taking that goes on, which is to say you have to pay $150 to $180 or $200 a month that this is included as part of your cable bill, and then you can essentially take it on the go.
Well, that was Here's the NFL DirecTV thing. If I wanted all the games, I'm a Bills fan, I live in Parkville, and I want the Bills, I have to get DirecTV. I had to get rid of Xfinity or whoever my cable service was, right? But that feels like it was 2005. That doesn't feel like it's 2022.
There are not people below the age of, say, you know, 35 who are going to be interested in that type of economic relationship where I have to spend $200 a month to watch something that I'm paying $11 a month for through my, you know, cable subscription. And so whether it is television or whether it is radio, now that they're on WBAL and 98 Rock, the same thing. If you go onto their phone and pick out their app, you cannot listen to it streaming on your phone. You have to be either in your car or have a radio in your house, which, you know, most people don't have anymore. And so the challenge that they face, which they've been facing for a number of years, is making that economic deal in order to move these listening and watching opportunities to the more mobile-friendly phone, tablet, in your Alexa, in your house, speaker system, et cetera.
There is no conduit right now for me to click on this button, looking on this screen or on this screen or my wife's tablet and get an Oriole game tonight and give them $3, $8, $12, $179. I don't even get it, right? Like, if I buy the season thing because I'm in market, I still have to buy television, right?
Right, exactly.
No wonder nobody they're out of their minds. Do they have meetings? Do they talk to their consumers? Seriously.
Yeah, so the answer is some people are doing it. This local streaming. So, for example, the New York Yankees have been doing it. Other teams have been doing it. This is not a news flash. It costs money to do that. It costs money to configure, to build the app, to do the number of other things that are required to do it. And again, the question is there more market over here? And what do I dilute if I do that? And, you know, the whole economics of what do I get on a monthly basis from Comcast, Xfinity, or others who are sending the teams checks based on how many people are subscribers. And look, if you're a subscriber to Xfinity like I am, and I look at my bill every month, I have $11.50 charge for two things. That's a regional sports fee that essentially says, Masson 1, Masson 2, and the NBC Sports Washington. So I get three channels for $11.50 that I cannot eliminate. I can't say I don't want it. If I take, it's a surcharge to my fee. If I take cable, if I take a cable bill, it comes with it. So that's that kind of delivery. If you cut me off, then suddenly that $11 times however many thousand people would do that are not coming to them. So they're trying to figure out that balance. But again, most people are making the decision to move and create the opportunity for your phone so that you can get people under the age of 35 to listen, to watch, to subscribe, to do whatever, to make a direct relationship, what they call a direct-to-consumer, direct relationship with their consumer versus getting it through Xfinity or whoever else you get your bundle from. So it's a huge challenge. It's a high cost bar financially, but it's not, it's something that you have to do. There's not even a choice anymore. This is 2022, not 2011, when people are still sort of speculating with their phones as to what to do. They want to take it on the go. They want to watch the highlights when and where they want to watch it. And that will entice them to become a bigger fan, to attend more events or do the other things that teams want their fans to do financially.
Marty Conway's here, always making sense. He's the good professor at Georgetown University. You can follow him out on LinkedIn or on Twitter at Marty Conway. When we reconvene, we'll talk about how the NFL owns the offseason because they have cost certainty, and they also have a salary cap, and everybody spends the same amount of money, and it's uber competitive, and the draft's coming up, and they've even pushed the schedule off until May for another month to add some intrigue. So it's an NFL world. You and I at some point will get to hey, Shohei Ohtani's coming to Camden Yards the second week of July, Marty. I need to count on you to go with me, all right?
Absolutely. Count me in.
All right, there he goes. Marty Conway, the good professor from Georgetown University, always bringing some credibility. I took that word down, credibility. I'm going to start using Orioles and credibility together. I am Nestor. I'm trying to get my credibility together. My friends at Cole Roofing are always supporting me. I found my mug after 60 days. It's now a wash in my Royal Farms Kona blend that we have going on here. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries, coming this week to Greenmount Station in Carroll County. Next week, we're going to be in White Marsh up at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog, and then to Perry Hall at Conrad's Crabs on the 27th. Big month around here. Baseball back after it. The NFL draft around the corner. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.